And welcome, folks. This is the eclipse day, April 8th. All kinds of things are happening around this world. And we got the stories here on Truth versus News. And essentially, our show is called Truth versus News, yeah? But that should never be. We should have truth and news to be together. But thank God, they're pulled apart. And we have the best people in the world here to discuss it. We have Jim Fisher, the author of very good books here, JFK, and Nobody Died on Sandy Hook, and other things that are, these are books that you really should have in your library. And of course, America nuked on 9/11. And are they still available, Jim, at Moonwalk Books?
Yeah, all except Hook, yes.
Oh, good. And then we have Scott Bennett. He's a lieutenant who's been around the world in Russia and been an ambassador for the United States. He's a wonder to behold. I praise him highly for all his great work. And then we have Brian Davidson, who's a private investigator out of Houston, who has seen a lot and does a lot and knows a lot and tells it right like it is. So today, I guess we did have an eclipse. So give us a straight skinny on what really happened there, Jim.
Well, we have a path that it took across the United States, which had a lot of interesting locations on it, Don, including that of the Buffalo mass shooting, of the East Palestine train derailment, of the Kent State Massacre, Mike Pence's birthplace, Padua school shooting, Jonesboro school shooting, Whitewater, Rose Lawn, Bill Clinton birthplace, JFK assassination, Waco massacre, Uvalde shooting, Eagle Pass, illegal immigration. Interesting, but those of us who are concerned that there might be a false flag today seem to be disappointed. Doesn't appear to be the case. Thus, we begin with World War III now appearing to be inevitable.
Oh, boy.
Here's why it can't be avoided. If you're getting the feeling the globalists are really pushing hard for World War III, you're not alone. In the past month, there have been multiple instances of European and U.S. officials hinting a new military draft. EU has talked openly about boots on the ground in Ukraine. NATO officials have said unequivocally they will not accept a loss in Ukraine. Kremlin has warned nukes are on the table if Western troops enter the war. The U.S. has recently asserted that Ukraine will be joining NATO, a red line for Russia. Then there's Israel and Gaza. I warned months ago that the war in Gaza would expand into a multi-front conflict that would probably include Iran. I also warned it would be to Israel's benefit if Iran entered the war, because that would force the U.S. to become directly involved. Iran had already been engaging proxy attacks through Lebanon and Hezbollah, but Israel's attack on the Iranian embassy, actually the consulate in Syria, basically ensures Iran will now directly commit his strikes on Israeli targets. In other words, much like World War I, the situation is being escalated by the political elites, despite the fact that the general public in the West is increasingly opposed to participating. The globalists want to send us to war, whether we like it or not. Every decision so far makes peaceful resolution impossible. One saving grace, perhaps, is that the public is far more aware and awake to the fact that it's not their duty to blindly go and fight when the government calls upon them. Social media has given a platform for those to widely voice concerns about war, while in the past, objectors felt isolated. Obviously, some of this is based purely on fear. A large percentage of Gen Z is unequipped mentally or physically to go to war. Why more than 70% of military recruits today are rejected before they get to boot camp. These are many of the same young folks who post Ukrainian flags to their social media profiles, jump headfirst into anti-Russian rhetoric. Now that they're faced with the possibility of having to sacrifice for Ukraine, they become angry, even terrified. It's clear some NATO troops have already been deployed and have been there for some time. as I've noted, strategies used during the first Ukrainian counterattack were far too advanced for Ukrainian troops and their leadership to pull off without help. Anti-armor tactics were very familiar, similar in execution to tactics used by the U.S. and British special forces. Not surprisingly, as soon as foreign mercenary recruit rates dropped, Ukraine's momentum fizzled. The Russians are well aware of the situation. As long as smaller groups can be sent under the guise of mercenary forces, there's little they can do about it. It's the open deployment of NATO battalion a cause for greater concern. There is zero basis for a domino narrative here. Not once has Russia indicated they intend to invade the EU. In fact, Putin has stated again and again, the war in Ukraine is about protecting the separatists in the Donbass region from Ukraine itself and about the continued escalation of NATO armaments and not allowing Ukraine to join NATO. My suspicion to Putin being a globalist aside, if we look at the war from a cost-benefit perspective, there's nothing for Russia to gain by threatening Europe. And there's a problem with logistics. If Russia is supposed to be struggling in Ukraine, how could they have the means to fight an expanded front against the combined military might of Europe and the U.S.? Not only would the result be a nuclear war, which both sides would lose, but if you look at the situation objectively, there is a group of people out there who do have a lot to gain. Smaller attacks on Russian supplies, as well as civilians, have been escalating in the past month. The terror attack on Moscow, which U.S. blames on ISIS, resulted in the death of at least 130 drone attacks, threatened oil depots, and other resources. In the grand scheme of war, they are inconsequential, but they will undoubtedly lead to extensive bombardment of Ukrainian cities and further disablement of Ukrainian infrastructure, power, water. Other utilities will be destroyed, and a resource crisis will ensue. Compared to the U.S. invasion of Iraq, Russia's managed to keep civilian casualties in Ukraine very low. But each new attack on Russian soil instigates a larger Russian retaliation, and that may be the goal, to get the Russians to creator, a larger Ukrainian population center, thereby giving NATO an excuse to send troops into the region. In the Middle East, the primary driver for international involvement is oil. We all know, but oil access is not the end goal in Ukraine, just a mechanism for getting the U.S. involved. To reiterate, I care not which side began the fight or how back it goes in history. This is irrelevant. What I know is Hamas started this particular war by killing civilians, and you should not start a war unless you're willing to accept the consequences. That said, I find it suspicious that Israel's defensive measures were so useless. They were completely unaware of the Hamas incursion until it was too late. In any case, the conflagration is guaranteed to bring in other large military elements. Iran is going to enter the fray, no way around it. It may occur first in the form of economic warfare. The Strait of Hormuz is most likely target. Shutting down 30% of the world's oil traffic would be disastrous for the West. America's entry is thus also guaranteed. Biden's been struggling for the past 3 years to manipulate oil prices by dumping strategic reserves on the market. By artificially keeping prices down, he keeps energy prices down. By keeping energy prices down, he reduces the growth of CPI. Ukrainian attack on Russian oil depots have helped to spike gas prices exactly because Russian oil is still being purchased by Western countries through back channels. You can't just cut off one of the largest energy suppliers in the world without huge effects on prices at the pump. And these attacks are revealing how sensitive the oil market is to the slightest threat to supply. I believe the reason the establishment pressing so hard for World War III is because the upcoming elections and their COVID agenda fail. COVID lockdown vaccine passport were their big play to create a permanent authoritarian environment with the ability to crush conservative groups who it refused to submit. And no matter how you slice it, they didn't get what they wanted. World War III is the natural plan B. It's important to understand that every crisis created by globalists is meant to destroy the freedom-minded. The true target is not Russia or Iran. They are peripheral. These events are designed to create an environment conducive to tyranny. They act as cover for engineered economic collapse. They act as cover for the real war against those who still defend liberty. You could say World War III has already begun, at least in economic terms. I also doubt the end game is a worldwide nuclear exchange. Why spend decades building a massive control grid only to vaporize it in seconds? I do think the danger of kinetic warfare is skyrocketing, and that U.S. and European citizens will be directly affected. It'll take a sizable resistance movement to change the path we're being forced to follow. Things will get much worse before they get better. In any case, yes, Scott, your thoughts.
Well, that's a macro, quite an exhaustive analysis of a lot of the different issues, problems, forces, currents, factors that are creating the environment that we're in. And I want to, move into the proactive realm. I never am reactive. I always want to be attacking problems, attacking idiots, attacking the stupid, attacking otherwise known as Democrats. So what we have here, Jim, in that couple parts in that article, you lay out, or it lays out very effectively, the combat and effectiveness of the American man and woman to enter the military. Either they're fat or they're stupid or they're medicated or all the above and have the transgender rainbow flag tattooed on their brain. Whatever it is, there's an affliction, lack of fathers, whatever it is. But they are not up to the military character that you went through, Jim, or that even I went through much later. So our military echelon, our military part of our body politic is rotten and decayed and, full of gangrene and pus, you might say. There are some good ones, but I'm not interested in dwelling on the good ones. I'm interested in dwelling on that which afflicts us. So we're afflicted. We have limited reserves. And what's happening in the United States? Well, we have an authoritarian, totalitarian Democrat Party that's never going to relinquish power. They're always going to be doing everything they can to hold on to power, including killing President Trump, including falsely killing Kamala Harris and a Manchurian candidate scenario and blaming it on Iran or Russia or a MAGA reporter or all the above or MAGA supporter. So the Democrats are never going to relinquish power. And the only way that they can keep power is through a war, a false flag, or a series of them, whether it's in Israel or Ukraine or the southern border. One of the things that can be done to take the southern border off the chess game, of course, is going over to the Russian side of all of the Ukrainian soldiers that are currently locked up in Russian prisons and do a transfer of custody and say, the good ones, the smart ones, the non-Nazi ones, those who don't want to live in Ukraine anymore because for whatever reason, but they don't want to fight and kill Russians. Why not take them out of the Russian jails and say, instead of spending 5 years or 10 years in a Russian jail for things that you did, let's make a deal and a shuffle and a prisoner swap and bring them over to the United States southern border to put them into the custody of the Attorney General of Texas, not the United States, Texas, or Florida, but I think Texas is the best. Bring those Ukrainian hard-hitting, seasoned warriors, bring them over in a chain of custody, and instead of doing the chain gang, you put them in charge of managing Texas's border-long firing range. border long firing range that has 10 miles regress into Mexico. So that Apache helicopters, tanks, grenade throwers, snipers, civilians, Texas militia, Texas Rangers, Texas National Guard, the entirety of Texas uses its border as a military and civilian firing range. And you could man that range 24/7 with Ukrainian seasoned, hardened soldiers led by people like me, who knows how to lead men and knows how to interrogate and inspire them. I did it when I was over there. So I more and more I think about the problems of this country, the more I come to a military character solution. And a military character solution is somebody who walks on to the game field, walks into the gladiatorial arena and says, "I'm the meanest, toughest son of a bitch around. Either follow and do what I want to do, or come up and try and knock me off, and we'll see how many of it takes for you to be destroyed." And that's the military man position. That's the warrior man position. That's he who goes on and says, "This is the way, walk ye in it." And I think that's really the only solution that we have to this pressing problem, because we don't have anybody worth anything for the most part. Yes, of course we have good men in the military. Yes, of course we have good veterans. Yes, of course we have good Americans. But we need an external chemical reaction to solving this problem. And this is the thing, Jim. We're simply using the instrument and the system that the Democrats have used to bring up every banana republic, third world, knuckle-dragging retard from Haiti or Ecuador or south of the border. Only we're bringing them in from Ukraine. White Anglo-Saxon Christian Russian Orthodox hard-kicking, ass-kicking, seasoned tough soldiers who've been fighting the toughest army on earth. You lead them into managing the southern border, and that border crisis will be over in one day, especially if I'm in charge of it. So I think we have to begin moving into these directions of solutions using what the Democrats have put in place against us. What they meant for evil, God means for good. And I think the firing range and bringing it in the Ukrainians, I think there's I think not only is there good in that plan, but quite honestly, I think that is the only plan. Jim, I'll hand it back to you.
Wow.
Right.
Well, NATO and Western forces are sure putting Russia in a bad position. They haven't fought very aggressively. Now they're in a situation where NATO is basically going to try to fight a war using Ukrainian soldiers as cannon fodder and just provide a support position very similar to what we did in Vietnam. And NATO is basically going to go to war with Russia. Now,
Ooh.
Russia doesn't need to come over and fight the West on our turf whatsoever. I mean, obviously, whatever forces are in play that are coordinating what's happening on our southern border have allowed for an army to be on our land anyway. It doesn't need to be a Russian army. It doesn't need to be an EMP attack or a nuclear war or anything else. There's already an army occupying America given this situation. And you know why? Because obviously they want to wash our culture out and destroy us from the inside out by destroying the middle class, continuing to create a division
Uh-oh.
between the upper classes and the lower classes, and
Your
one goal. Sound.
sound got muted, or Brian. It was very clear, and
Testing,
then
testing.
good,
Still working?
You're back.
Okay.
You got it.
So Russia isn't going to need to attack America like we had to deal with during the Cuban Missile Crisis. They're going to be fighting against NATO, and NATO is basically just a Western alliance that continues to grow every day with Finland and Sweden. And now the discussion is that Ukraine is going to be able to join NATO as well. Robert F. Kennedy came out this week and spoke pretty straightforward about how the $113 billion that we gave to Ukraine for the war efforts really just a money laundering scheme for our defense contractors at Lockheed and BlackRock and Vanguard, and that their purpose is to just basically buy up what remains or rent up what remains of Ukraine property for growing Monsanto type products. So I'm concerned about what's taking place over there. I don't really know how to explain why Putin hasn't made more aggressive moves in this situation, but I think that we're just putting in a position where his back's against the wall and he's going to have to make aggressive positions toward Western forces. And if it means all out war, it means all out war. Where the bombs land, I don't know. Everybody's always talked about nuclear war as being sort of a no winner solution, but when your culture and your way of life are being attacked and you're trying to protect it, what other choice do you have? Lay down and play dead? I mean, the Russian media is not like the Western media in the sense that they're very patriotic. They tell more truth than the Western media tells, and the people are more informed than the people over here in the West. Ooh. So I suspect that Putin will be getting a lot of support. He had 87% support rate at the last election. And I expect that he'll have to figure out a way to bond the Wagner forces with the Russian military forces in a way that makes sense. And then he's going to have to ask for help, probably from China and maybe some other nations as well, to help support his fight against NATO. But it's going to be a fight against NATO. Make no mistake about it. It's unfortunately, it's going to be labeled as Ukraine, but it's truly a fight against NATO and Western forces.
Well, let me just say, Russia doesn't want to stir up a conflict in the people of Europe or the United States. He's trying to show the people of the United States and Europe, these people in charge of your political institutions are psychopaths. We're going to let you change them. And we're trying to contain this forest fire as long as we can. But you have to get rid of these people, Rishi Sunak, Annalena Baerbock, Schultz, Macron, Biden. The Iranians are saying the same thing. The Iranians have said, we're going to postpone taking retribution upon the Israelis for blowing up our consulate. We're going to postpone. We'll set that aside if you set in motion a ceasefire. That's another subject. The U.S. won't do it. But I just wanted to accentuate the Russians in particular, and Putin in particular, has said and is trying, and so is Lavrov and everyone, to not allow the government elites in NATO, America, Europe to draft their people like Zelensky is drafting his people into the meat grinder. Russia is very much into the long game, and the long game is separating the political elites, parties, fraudulent presidents from the people, letting the people work it out, and then hoping to have a rapprochement in the next 6 months to a year.
Well, we have much more along this line, including Ukraine will join NATO, Blinken announces, signaling an imminent World War III with Russia. In the clearest indication yet, the planet's on the verge of being plunged into another war. In the clearest indication yet, Secretary of State Antony Blinken has stated Ukraine will, in fact, be joining NATO. The reason this is more serious than perhaps anything else between Russia and the West in the past is because much of Ukraine is disputed territory. Russia controls Crimea and Donbass. The whole point of Putin's special op in Ukraine was to get back the rest of what he says is Russia. And, of course, to prevent Ukraine from joining NATO. By allowing Ukraine to join NATO, the West basically is declaring all of what is known as Ukraine to be outside of Russia's control, which crosses a very clear red line. This is intentionally starting World War III to help Hunter Biden paymaster level of insanity, tweeted one X account about this latest development. If or when NATO joins, Ukraine joins NATO, there'll be a ton of unresolved territorial issues and border conflicts, likely to spark a larger war dragging NATO through Article 5. Such a war would be extremely bloody and potentially escalate to nuclear Armageddon. Such a, back in the 1990s, when the former Soviet Union fell, the U.S. promised Russia and NATO would not expand any further to the east. That promise was later broken when Goldman Sachs looted Russia by privatizing much of the country, allowing NATO to move further east. Those developments upset Putin, but until now, he has restrained himself until this latest announcement. Because so much of Ukraine is disputed, Putin says, is rightfully Russia. Such a move crosses a very serious red line. It's utterly unacceptable. Would have been like Ireland or Canada join the Warsaw Pact, tweeted Will Tanner, which is why he launched the war, by demilitarizing Ukraine, by shelling its army into oblivion, by creating a constant conflict. He wants to keep Ukraine out of NATO without going to war with NATO. He thought we wouldn't be so dumb as to bring it into the alliance if we're fighting a war with Russia. But dumb the West truly is, as it makes a dangerous move in the interest of the 1% at the expense of everyone else. Apparently, Biden's admin is this insane, is willing to risk World War III, so Ukraine is controlled by the oligarchs who paid off Hunter rather than Putin and the oligarchs in his camp. Putin launched the offensive in the first place, which has everything to do with NATO's broken promises concerning NATO expansion, really non-expansion, in Eastern Europe. The war could have been avoided, the American Tribune reported. The hundreds of thousands dead, the millions now refugees, the wasted resources, human misery, could all have been avoided. All it would have taken is NATO keeping its word and not expanding, not recklessly dancing on Russia's red line for indiscernible reasons not related to the national interests. Meanwhile, Ukraine joining the bloc is like the start of a movie about the end of the world, Elon Musk has said. A pledge by Secretary of State Blinken that Ukraine will become a member of NATO. Looks like a scene from a movie about a nuclear apocalypse, interpreter Elon Musk believes, as reported by RT. The top U.S. diplomat reiterated the rock-solid determination of the U.S. and other members to include Ukraine in the military bloc at a NATO summit in Brussels this week. Speaking alongside Ukraine Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba, he said the purpose of the event was to help build a bridge to membership. This is literally how the nuclear apocalypse movie starts, Musk reported. He shared a video from the 1983 American film The Day After, depicting a fictional nuclear war between the U.S. and the USSR. The film was shown to Soviet audiences in 1987 when the two superpowers were negotiating a key nuclear arms control treaty. Moscow has cited NATO expansion in Europe against Russian objections and an intention to include Ukraine in the organization as one of the key causes of ongoing hostilities. The U.S. and its allies have claimed all nations have the right to seek accession, regardless of whatever concern Russia may have. Musk has previously spoken about the risk to Ukraine and the world of further escalation. Continued hostilities, for example, could result in Kiev losing access to the Black Sea. The billionaire has urged Ukraine to offer concessions to Moscow in exchange for a peace treaty. He's also backed the argument the U.S. attempts to weaken Russia by arming and funding Ukraine that they have backfired. This is literally how the nuclear apocalypse movie starts, Musk responds to NATO joining with Ukraine. Scott, Your thoughts?
Well, first of all, the film the day after, I remember that in the 1980s. You had a stronger military back then. You had a stronger country. You had a stronger culture. You had families. You had everything that you don't have today. That's why America was great in the 1980s. And Ronald Reagan, of course, added to that tremendously. His spirit, his charisma, his abounding presence was what was magnetic and charismatic to people like Gorbachev. And I would say the Soviet Union, USSR, did not collapse. I think there was a reorientation with the hope and expectation that the USSR and the United States would unite in a very permanent way. And in that permanent uniting, change fundamentally the organization and mission of NATO. But that was corrupted by Jewish Zionist, Khazari, Ashkenazi, whatever you want to call them, CIA operatives that were hell-bent on cannibalizing and stealing from Russia and breaking up its resources and putting in CIA oligarchs and on and on and on, that gave rise to Putin and gave rise to the shift away from America. I wrote about this in my book, 30 Years War. So what the United States was at the time of the making of the Day After film is not what we are today. We are at a sickly precipice at the lowest point in the history of this country. We have never had such a degree of broken families, absent fathers, homosexual lesbians raising up sons, homosexual men raising up sons and daughters, making them completely incapable of having healthy opinions or relationships because the homosexuality of in their spiritual rebellion puts them at odds with all truth and God, of course, is the source of truth, unless he breaks in and saves their soul and reorients them in a Saul of Tarsus moment. But America is not what it was in the 1980s. We have an education system that is absolutely a laughingstock. We've made political correctness the religion and the altar and the new language. You can't say certain things. We have a resort to safe spaces where blacks can have their own graduation things and safe spaces and whatever. We've also got the madness to think that we can go into other nations and bully and control and shape them. We may have been able to do that in the 1980s and even to a degree in the 1990s and early 2000, but the world has moved on. And instead of growing stronger and sharper and reinforcing the virtues of our manly character, of our families, of our you know, everything that made America great, instead of focusing on that, we've focused on disintegrating the United States and allowing the corrosive disintegration of Democrat claptrap and their faggoty rhino turncoats, Republicans like Lindsey Graham and others, Mitch McConnell, all those who are on the take. We've allowed them to come in a cacistocracy or a kleptocracy or oligarchy, whatever you want to call it. They have come and they are looting the United States of America. They're destroying the United States of America. So I see our future as either people rising up to defend and fight in a revolution civil war that'll end in, you know, a couple months, or getting out of America all completely. And because it's not worth it to stay in a country to fight for something that, you know, really has no hope of growing back in the soil of COVID-19 perverted minds that exist in this country. I think that's the real choice that's ahead. But before that, I think you're going to inevitably have a lot of bloody, violent responses from conservatives who are pushed too far by delusional Democrats with, self-narcissistic fascination of power, that they think they can order or command or do things to conservatives because they have a lanyard or a position of power. I don't think that's gonna fly, Jim.
Brian.
Wow. Wow, but.
Well, there, Scott's right that there is a big difference in America right now between when the movie The Day After came out and any of those other 80s type scenarios that have come out. Right now, the typical American household income is $30,000 less than the income required to afford a median priced home here in America. 22% of Americans skip meals in order to pay for mortgages and medical bills right now. 45% of Americans ages 18 to 29 are living at home with their parents, and they've given up hope on having and owning their own things or their own house. On top of this, 3.6 million immigrant invaders have come across our border at the tune of at the rate of approximately 300,000 a month to flood up and take up whatever properties are available. I know that I'm doing some work with a Hispanic guy that's got 12 people living under his roof down in Baytown. So America is not anywhere near what it used to be. We're not taking vacations as much as we used to. We're having to cut back on what we eat, what we drink, and why. I don't think that, well, I would blame the Uniparty. Certainly, I would put the brunt of the burden on the Democrats and their ridiculous policies that, you know, words are more important than the economy. And I think that having seen our election be cheated and stolen from us like it was in 2020 is pretty good proof and evidence that they have no will or desire to change their appetite. They're going to continue to eat away at the American middle classes and lower classes, continuing to cause a divide and break us. So Putin's not going to have to go after us. He's got to fight a different type of battle. Remember, all this billions and billions of dollars that are going to Ukraine are really going to defense industry contractors and gun manufacturers and weapons manufacturers. And then it's being called a loan to Ukraine or the Ukrainian people. I think when they figure that out, they're probably going to jump ship. And while at the meantime, things are just continuing to get very, very bad here in America for most average American. I know I feel the difference between where we were 10 years ago and 20 years ago. It does feel hopeless at times. Until we get a focus on something other than this, you know, weird academic discipline of everybody fall in line and you know, just fit in and into, and we change that over to think independently, act independently, gain an independent spirit and break loose from the system and raise your family properly. I don't think we're going to have much hope to fight off anything.
Unless you apply my Ukrainian plan.
Well, I wish I could disagree with you.
Right. Me too. Well,
NATO countries will have to send troops to Ukraine or accept catastrophic defeat, right, Paul Joseph Watson. State Department consultant Edward Lutwak says NATO countries will have to send soldiers to Ukraine or accept catastrophic defeat, and that Britain and France are already making preparation to do so. He might as well say they'll have to send soldiers to Ukraine and accept catastrophic defeat, or simply accept catastrophic defeat without sending soldiers to Ukraine. Either way, it's a lose-lose. Lutwak is a military strategist, served as consultant to Secretary of Defense, National Security Council, Department of State, and the Army. In an article for Unheard, Lutwak warns that Ukraine's 800,000 active personnel is too low to be successful in a war against Russia, that the country will continue losing soldiers in the process who cannot be replaced. This arithmetic is inescapable. NATO will soon have to send soldiers to Ukraine or else accept catastrophic defeat. Apparently, it's already in process. The British and French, along with the Nordic countries, are already quietly preparing to send troops, both small elite unit and logistic and support personnel, who can remain far from the front. The latter could blame a central role by releasing their Ukrainian counterparts for retraining in combat roles. NATO could also relieve Ukrainians currently tied up in the recovery and repair of damaged equipment, and could take over the technical parts of existing training programs for new recruits. It goes without saying, if NATO escalates its involvement, Moscow could conceivably choose to attack other NATO countries, something that would spark World War III. If Europe cannot provide enough troops, Russia will prevail on the battlefield. And even if diplomacy successfully intervenes to avoid a complete debacle, Russian military power will have victoriously returned to Central Europe. Noting the U.S. can only provide 40,000 who are already in Europe. He warns that if Russia wins the war, Europe will have to resort to the return of compulsory military service to prevent further territorial expansion, thereby presuming Russia wants to expand, which I take to be false. As we have highlighted, Ukrainian President Zelensky signed a new law lowering the age of conscription from 27 to 25. The average age of a Ukraine soldier is now over 40, same as Russia, underscoring how the whole conflict has been a devastating bloodbath for both. Shocking videos have emerged showing mentally disabled people on the front line being mocked by other Ukrainian soldiers. Back in December, Michael Malouf, former Pentagon official, said the war in Ukraine is effectively over because Ukraine's counteroffensive had failed and there's no appetite in America to continue to fund it. Meanwhile, a Frenchman fighting for Donbass warns his homeland against sending soldiers to Ukraine. French volunteer Serge Monnier, who fights in Donbass on Russia's side, has warned his country's authorities against sending soldiers to Ukraine. His video message was released by the International Reporters Agency. "I am a volunteer Frenchman. I came to Donbass in July 2014. Today, I would like to address the French government, especially the propagandists covering the conflict. The French government wants to send troops to Ukraine, particularly Odessa. This decision may cost the lives of many French soldiers because if they come, these soldiers will be eliminated. The generals who lead the French army know its condition and its capabilities. The French army has not fought a high-intensity war against a superior army." He added he had joined the Russian armed forces and noted the consequences could be catastrophic for French troops. Speaking of other volunteers from France fighting on Russia's side, he noted some were being instructed as UAV operators. Scott, your thoughts?
Well, if you remember The Wizard of Oz, and I think this is a good analogy to get into perspective what we're facing here. If you remember The Wizard of Oz, you had, when Dorothy landed in Oz, the yellow brick road starting in that little munchkin land, right? The little munchkin world. And then further down the film, you had at the Wicked Witch's house, those big Russian-looking gray soldiers, you know, that would march around. Remember that part of the film when they infiltrate the Wicked Witch's castle? But those soldiers of the Wicked Witch, you know, big, brooding, looking like Russian hats. Let's just say, for example, those big gray soldiers are the real Russians. NATO and the French and the Germans and the Americans and the British are the munchkins. We represent the NATO EU, the NATO, you know, that's what they represent. They're a bunch of castrated wooden dolls. There's nothing there. So you think a bunch of lollipop sucking or other things sucking, Europeans are going to go up in their munchkin land voice and face the Russian bear? It's laughable. And this article is laughable when it talks about, well, NATO, I mean, this person who wrote it or contributed, has he ever worn the uniform? Does he know anything? If he does, he's a liar or an agent. To think that NATO is going to go in and take the Ukrainians and give them some R&R and go get the equipment that they can't get, and they're going to, the NATO, the Ukrainians are going to go through a whole reformatting. Why NATO just kind of nonchalantly skips and sings its way into the front lines against Russia, and somehow Russians are just going to let the, oh, time out, you know, the French fags are here, or the Germans, or whoever. Oh, we can't do anything now, you know, they're in Odessa. The Russians are going to go, you know, destroy them, you know, with the moment they come into the country, destroy them. That's how Russia is going to play. They're not going to tolerate any NATO presence in Ukraine. They're not going to tolerate any of these refitting, retooling, retraining fantasies. And Odessa is going to be Russian. And if anyone thinks that Russia doesn't have clandestine agents and operations in the thousands, if not tens of thousands, already embedded in Ukraine, in Odessa, in the Donbass, in Kiev, in Kharkov, in all of these regions, in Poland, in Germany, in the surrounding areas, you're a fool. Of course, Russia has embedded its own people there with explosives and anything and everything necessary should they have to press the DEFCON 1 button. And that is anybody from a European army rank, the French come into Odessa or elsewhere to do some serious operations, Russia is going to annihilate them clandestinely, covertly at first, and then openly. A lot of the casualties you see, no one talks about. There's been lots of Americans killed by Russians, lots of Frenchmen, lots of Germans, lots of British, lots of the French Foreign Legion, a lot of Africans. Africans just kind of pop their guns and then run. I've seen that up close and personal. And I'll tell you this, I'll end it here. People don't go to the Donbass to fight for Russia. They go to the Donbass to fight for their wives or their moms or dads or children that they already have there. Or they've gone there and fell in love with the country and married someone and are staying there. Donbass is made up of independent republics, just like America was independent republics when they declared their independence from Great Britain. So did the Donbass away from the genocidal Nazi maniacs that were trying to annihilate the Russian language and torture and kill all of the Russians living in eastern Ukraine who wouldn't go along with Victoria Nuland and John Kerry and Barack Obama's faggot horde, rainbow flag, Poroshenko, that Trump was stupid enough to support and give weapons to. You know, people have gone over there to fight against that as independent republics. And these are not parts of Russia. They are independent republics that have entered into a mutual defense pact with Russia. Got to be smart, and it's hard to be smart with the American mainstream media distorting everything in the reality. Well, I end it to say the Lilliput or the Munchkin land NATO Europeans standing up against the Russia or the Russian soldiers is just as laughable as anybody moving into Donbass to grant some sort of relief or R&R to the Ukrainians. No, it's done. They have no men. They have nobody who wants to serve. They have a decimated military, a crime against humanity. And the next phase of this is going to be the criminal prosecution of all of the war crimes and crimes against humanity that have occurred in Ukraine that have been done by the hand of the United States, Britain, Germany, NATO, whoever, from biochemical labs to human trafficking to child sex slavery to every evil that Poroshenko and Zelensky have done during their tenure, which is very quickly going to end in a Hitlerian in the bunker annihilation of Ukraine like it was in Germany. You may have regions of isolated badlands that these crazy Ukrainians could be pushed up into, but the majority of Ukraine, Kiev, Odessa, and elsewhere, it's going back to Russian control. Jim?
Brian?
Well, one other way to look at this is that, this whole thing started over the failed Minsk agreements, and all Putin wanted was a commitment from the West that Ukraine, their neighbor on to the south wasn't going to join another NATO nation. In the meantime, since the war has started, we have Finland and Sweden that have been convinced to join NATO. So there's more and more fronts opening up where Western forces are continuing to encroach on Russia's borders. Who wants to fight for NATO in Ukraine? If Ukraine is running out of soldiers and they're incapable of continuing to wield these weapons, then equipping them with the more weapons isn't going to do you any good anyway. So it appears to me that a lot of this is just a lot of Western chatter to continue to get support for a position that's untenable so that they can continue to cut another check for $50 billion to this vendor or $50 billion to that vendor, when in reality, there's no hope whatsoever left in this battle for Ukraine, even if they did bring in NATO soldiers. If NATO soldiers found themselves in a direct engagement with Russian soldiers, I would venture to say that the Russian soldiers would absolutely obliterate NATO people that are paid a fee to go down there and be peacemakers with a gun. It's foolish. It takes a special force to fight the Russian military and the Wagner group. It's going to be an absolute catastrophe if NATO thinks with their ridiculous blue helmets and blue shirts, they're going to roll on in there and keep the peace against an angry Russia that has been betrayed by Western forces for the last 10 years.
And that have just had their children murdered.
Yes, yes. By the concert attack. Right. Meanwhile, Moscow names the Ukrainian divers who attacked the Nord Stream. The Prosecutor General's Office of the Russian Federation sent requests to the competent authorities of the U.S., Germany, France, and Cyprus to investigate the attacks on the Nord Stream and Nord Stream 2 gas pipelines. The Prosecutor General's Office took action after it received an appeal of State Duma deputies and public figures calling to investigate facts of possible involvement of individuals and structures in the preparation of financing of terrorist acts on the territory of the Russian Federation, as well as the undermining of the Northern Stream pipelines. In their statement, they named the names of the people who conducted the covert operation to divert any suspicion from the United States and NATO member countries. The authors of the appeal drew attention to the fact that a detailed chronology of events before the explosion of the gas pipelines was described in the article How America Took Out the Nord Stream Pipeline, written by American investigative journalist Seymour Hersh. The article reports on events and meetings of the top political, military, and intel leadership of the U.S. aimed at planning the operation to destroy the Nord Stream pipelines. The deputies noted that NATO exercises were held right before the explosions near the pipelines, though a different location was announced for the military drills. They also pointed out the unusual navigation routes of ships from Great Britain, Panama, and Poland in areas near the site of future explosions on September 22nd through 24th of 2022. Here you have Joe Biden, Seymour Hersh, and effects of the destruction. Seymour Hersh revealed in his investigation that at all stages of planning, the Biden admin paid special attention to diverting suspicion away from the U.S. and NATO. Therefore, according to the authors of the Russian appeal, a well-planned operation assumed the existence of a cover-up to exclude accusations from real perpetrators and beneficiaries. Ukraine, which is in conflict with the Russian Federation, is ideally suited for such a role in an interstate organized criminal group, the appeal notes. They drew attention to numerous statements by leadership of the main intelligence directorate of the Ministry of Defense of Ukraine and personally Kirill Budanov, included in the list of terrorists and extremists in the Russian Federation, about the involvement of his department in carrying out terrorist acts against citizens in interests of the Russian Federation. Ukraine's involvement in the damage to the Nord Stream pipelines was covered by the world's largest media, thus referring to information obtained from reliable Ukrainian sources. The authors claimed a group of divers was moved to the covert operation under control of the head of the GUR, Burdanov, organizational and technical assistance provided by American specialists under the direct supervision of the deputy chief of mission at the U.S. Embassy in Kiev, Christopher W. Smith, and the former head of the GUR, Vasily Burba. According to Russian deputies, the group was first trained in Deepwater Quarry at the Zhytomyr region, after which it was sent to Romania, where its members obtained Romanian documents, lived in a private home near the Romanian Mangala submarine base. Training sessions were conducted there as close as possible to real conditions in the area of the South Streams. After training, the group was sent to Poland, where the yacht Andromeda was rented. According to the Russian appeal, the operational leader was Roman Chervinsky, who was previously named the coordinator of the attack on the pipelines by the Washington Post. Chervinsky served in the counterintelligence department since 2016, and in 2022 became the commander of one of the units of the Special Operation Forces of Ukraine. He's currently being held in a prison in Kiev on charges of abuse of power as a result of a conspiracy aimed to force a Russian pilot to flee to Ukraine. According to the sources, the cover-up group included five more people: Kunstov Sergei and Altolovich, an officer of the Department of Environmental Protection and Civil Protection of the Department of Environmental Safety and Mine Action of the Ministry of Defense of Ukraine, named as the senior member of the group. Another is Anatoly Ivanovich Burgomaestrienko, captain of the first rank, head of the intelligence department, deputy chief of the Navy for intelligence, trained to mine demolition at the 131st Center for the Special Operation Force. Three people were diving directly to the Nord Stream pipelines. They are Oleg Grigorovich Rivera, senior inspector of the engineering and technical platoon of the Rapid Response Company of the main directorate, a female techno diver with the call sign Marisha, as well as Russian Anatolovich Rudensko with the call sign Chaplain, former deputy mayor of the Ukrainian city of Bila Servka. Earlier, Rudensko served in the police department of the Ministry of Internal Affairs of Ukraine on the Barkovovat pledge with the name Russian Rudet from the city of Bila Tsent. You can see photos of a man in diving equipment. Scott, I think they've nailed it. Your thoughts?
Well, it's always impressive to see these investigation leads. And I mean, the Russians are notorious for it. So they will overturn every stone, and nothing is going to escape their scrutiny and their presentation of the legal case. And this applies to everything that's been occurring in Ukraine and that the United States has done or participated in. All of these accounts have been very carefully accounted for, and the bill is coming very soon. And this fantasy that some guys rented a yacht and just kind of floated out on the middle of that waterway and threw on their Jacques Cousteau bikini swim trunks and with a snorkel and a mask swam down in frigidly cold water and planted explosives is a laughing stock. And I would say they've done this with tutoring and partners that were U.S. divers and British divers as well, to make sure this was done properly. And of course, as Seymour Hersh pointed out, there was a naval exercise directly over that area. That's precisely exactly the time where you have submarines underneath providing cover for such an operation. Jim?
Brian?
Well, I guess the important question is, if you're going to take this article at face value, if you're going to, how did Western intelligence know about the attack? What did they know about the attack? When did they know about the attack? German magazine Der Spiegel wrote that the CIA had warned Germany in the summer of 2022 about possible attacks on the Baltic Sea pipelines. Washington Post, citing leaked information online, knew all about it in advance. The intelligence report was based on information theoretically provided by a source in Ukraine. You know, nobody's naming names. It's very convenient to finally have an answer. I guess Seymour Hersh did put enough pressure on them that they decided to come up with a story to cover for it. Whether or not it's real, I don't know. Everything is smoke and mirrors in this game. And I can't see anybody actually letting the truth out about this. I can see it much easier being a frame job on some other people. But, you know, even if it was these guys that were in the actual suits, who's behind the show? You know, obviously it's a Western force. And that's really all that matters. That's the end of the line.
Very good. Very good. Don, take us out.
Oh, wow. What a way on an eclipse day, April 8th, talking all about war instead of peace here on a universal happening here. There is a lot of war there in the offing here, a lot of controversy, and people are not wanting to get along, it looks like. So it's a rough time. Now, we covered it pretty well. I think you're going to find that it's going to be worth coming back and showing this, and then coming back for our second hour, which I've seen in advance and it's as hot as this one. So don't miss it. And thank you for watching and sharing, folks. And thanks for your good comments. God bless.